Washing Tech.
5G can provide a better solution for that last mile connectivity and provide Wi-Fi to homes that don't have it.
Welcome to the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast. We deliver the latest tech policy news and brightest tech policy experts to you. Wherever you are, so that you can stay productive, relevant, and informed in less time. From Washington, D.C., it's the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast with Joe Miller.
Equifax settles the lawsuit brought against it for the massive data breach of 2017. The viral app FaceApp raises national security concerns, and Lauren McCarty is my guest. Hey everybody, Equifax has settled with 48 state U.S. attorneys general, plus the attorneys general for Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, as well as the Federal Trade Commission and Consumer Financial Protection Bureau for up to $700 million. The settlement will compensate the 147 million victims of a 2017 data breach that evidence suggested Equifax was aware of but did nothing about. Settlement proceeds will also be distributed to the 50 states and territories, as well as the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. FaceApp, a viral app created by Russian firm Wireless Labs, sparked privacy concerns and angst among lawmakers and the public last week. FaceApp allows users to upload selfies and lets users see what they'd look like if they swapped genders or what they're likely to look like 50 years from now. The app's terms of service, though, which few of us actually reads, leaves it within the FaceApp's sole discretion to terminate your access to its services, even if losing access causes you loss or harm. The terms also reserve FaceApp's right to store your pictures even after you remove them to, quote, including and without limitation, comply with certain U.S. and foreign regulations, which could be those of any government in the world, including the Russian government. The terms acknowledge that FaceApp uses an artificial intelligence algorithm that enables its ability to alter your photos. Senator Chuck Schumer called for the FBI and FTC to investigate, saying in a letter to the agencies that the app could pose, quote, national security and privacy risks for millions of U.S. citizens. Partially in response to the domestic hacking of election systems and partially in response to Russia's hacking of the 2016 presidential election that was alleged in the Mueller report, the Senate has passed a bill which would criminalize the hacking of voter machines to gain access to voter data. Defending the Integrity of Voting Systems Act passed by unanimous consent on Wednesday night. Senators Whitehouse, Blumenthal, and Graham introduced the legislation earlier this year. Powerful lawmakers, including Maxine Waters and most of the Senate Banking Committee, as well as administration officials, including the President and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, are all highly skeptical of Facebook's new cryptocurrency, Libra. Senator Sherrod Brown on the Senate Banking Committee was especially vocal in his opposition to the currency during a hearing in which Facebook's lead for the project, David Marcus, testified. Brown was incredulous that after Facebook, which, quote, moved fast and broke our political discourse, broke journalism, helped incite a genocide, and undermined our democracy, end quote, now wants to have a global cryptocurrency available to its 2 billion plus users that would be a global commercial version of the Federal Reserve. Republicans on the panel also expressed opposition, including Banking Commission Chairman Mike Crapo, who suggested the creation of a separate regulatory agency to deal with cryptocurrency. In the House, Maxine Waters announced that she will be calling Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg to testify. Social media bots are widely seen to have played a decisive role in spreading misinformation in advance of the 2016 U.S. presidential election. In fact, Symantec released a report in June showing that Russia's propaganda program in that election cycle was even more extensive than was originally thought. So Senator Dianne Feinstein has introduced legislation to prohibit campaigns from using these spam bots to subvert future elections. It's called the Bot Disclosure and Accountability Act. Amazon has hired Trump ally Jeff Miller to lobby on behalf of the company to win approval to work on a $10 billion war cloud contract for the Pentagon. Earlier in the week, Trump had expressed opposition to the contract. Republicans are also urging the president not to thwart the contract. Events. Today, Tuesday, July 23rd, the American Federation for Children is having an event entitled Parents and Students Share Their Vision for 21st Century Education in America. That's from 11:45 to 1 p.m. in the Senate Visitor Center, Room 202. Then the Congressional Caucus on Smart Cities is having an event called Smart Campuses 101, Introduction to the Future. That's from 12 to 1 p.m. in the Rayburn House Office Building, Room 2044. The Population Association of America is having an event from 2 to 3 entitled Drawing a Line, How We Measure Poverty and Why It Matters. That's in Rayburn, 2043. Now turning to Wednesday, tomorrow, July 24th, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom is having an event from 8 to 9 entitled Anti-Semitism, the World's Oldest Hatred New Again. That's in Rayburn House Office Building, Room 2168. Then we have Girls in Tech having a Venture Capital 101 event, 11:45 to 1 p.m. at Mindspace. That's at 1301 K Street Northwest. And the Girl Scouts of America is also having an event called Ready for Takeoff, Girl Scouts and Space Science from 12 to 1. That's in Rayburn 2325. The Government Affairs Industry Network is having an event entitled Career Transitions, Expectations versus Reality from 12 to 1:30 at Covington and Burling at 850 10th Street Northwest. Then Leader Schumer and the Senate Diversity Ice Cream Social. That's at 3:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. in Hart Senate Office Building 902. That's at Hart. And the U.S. Department of Energy is having an event, Modernizing the Grid for American Security, Innovation, and Economic Growth from 4 to 7 in Rayburn 2253. Then on Monday, July 29th, Public Opinion Strategies is having an event called What's Next for Patient Experience Measurement. That's from 11:45 to 1:30 p.m. in Dirksen Senate Office Building, Room G50. And you can find links to all of these events as well as the stories in the show notes, and our handle is at WashingTech.
You're plugged into the WashingTech Tech Policy Podcast, the inclusive voice of tech policy.
My guest today is Lauren McCarty, Senior Director of Policy and Government Relations at Nokia, where she advocates on technology issues, including 5G, spectrum, and security. Prior to joining Nokia, Lauren served as counsel to the Energy and Commerce Committee during the 115th Congress, where she advised members of the committee on communications and technology issues. Lauren also spent 2 years as a legislative assistant to Senator Steve Daines in Montana. Lauren graduated with a Bachelor of Science from Minnesota State University and a JD from Catholic University. Please welcome Lauren McCarty. Lauren, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So we've heard a lot about 5G. We keep hearing about 5G. We're hearing about it more and more. And we hear about a lot about what telecom companies are doing, the carriers, and their role in 5G. But what's Nokia's interest here?
Sure. Well, I think it might be helpful just to really quickly give a little bit of background on Nokia today as a company, just because the thing that we're most known for, our handset, our mobile phone business, we actually sold that part of our business a few years back. And so we're not in the handset business anymore. Although it's worth noting that there's a company, HMD Global, who is producing mobile phones with the Nokia name. So you might see mobile phones in the market with the Nokia name, but we're actually not in that business anymore. So Nokia today, we have about 100,000 employees in 100 countries. And at our core, we provide the products and services that support wireless networks. So there's really a lot of equipment and software that goes into powering wireless networks, from routers and access switches, antennas, base stations. And so that's where we come in. So as you can imagine, our biggest customers who also have a huge interest in 5G are the biggest wireless carriers. And our customers collectively provide subscriptions to 6.1 billion people. So it's a lot of people that stand to benefit from 5G here. And of course, we have invested very heavily in research and development. In 5G, we have Nokia Bell Labs, which is sort of our research arm in New Jersey. And just Nokia Bell Labs, they've won 9 Nobel Prizes, and they've contributed to Nokia's 40,000 patents worldwide. So 5G is obviously a huge opportunity for the company to be involved in both the development and the deployment, and we've already invested a lot to make sure that can happen. And so here in DC, we're of course engaged in 5G policy at all levels of government, in the administration, on Capitol Hill, at the FCC. We are invested in making sure that we have a friendly environment for research and development so that we can continue developing these products. And then lastly, Nokia is very involved in the standard setting process globally for 5G. And to date, we've already contributed thousands of technical contributions to the 5G technologies.
I had no idea that Nokia had five, or how many Nobel Prizes?
Nine.
Wow.
So we're very proud.
So 5G is associated with more connectivity and faster speed for mobile, but what else will 5G enable?
Sure. Well, 5G, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard this term before, but it really will power the fourth industrial revolution. It's much more significant than the jump from 3G to 4G, because we're talking about hundreds of millions of connected devices that can power things like smart vehicles, smart infrastructure, critical control of machinery, remote healthcare. And Nokia has spent a lot of time digging into some of these use cases and writing papers and conducting tests. So just to dig in quickly to a couple of the use cases. In the healthcare context, we're talking about things like remote monitoring. So if a patient has a chronic disease, a difficult pregnancy, and they can't get to a hospital for regular checkups, remote monitoring can really be a great option for them. And as you can imagine, these remote devices are monitoring a patient 24/7. Outside of healthcare, there's already a lot of testing going on the industrial side, things like smart manufacturing, mobile robots being able to carry out tasks on machinery that might be dangerous for humans, talking about autonomous vehicles inside manufacturing centers and transporting goods from factory to factory, things like augmented reality for manufacturing technicians so that they can see instructions and supplemental information in their field of vision while they're working. And the fact is that a lot of this technology for these applications already exists, but the latency and the bandwidth that's required can really easily overwhelm a 4G network. Then aside from industrial on the transportation side, we've heard a lot over the years about autonomous vehicles. But as you know, vehicles require instant real-time communication, and a couple of milliseconds of a delay could mean the difference between a collision or not. And then we're also thinking about communication vehicle to infrastructure. So vehicle to bridge, vehicle to road, vehicle to traffic light, so that cars can communicate with everything around them, not just other cars. And then aside from driverless cars, when we talk about 5G in transportation, what we're seeing is interest from a lot of cities in wanting to monitor and analyze data from their transportation systems, both on the roads and public transit like subways, to be able to monitor those traffic patterns and optimize to try to alleviate some congestion. And the problem that we're seeing in some of this testing is a lot of municipalities, to the extent they even have networks monitoring infrastructure, a lot of it is set up in a hodgepodge way, and none of the networks communicate with each other. So with 5G, we can actually bind all of those networks together and allow cities to see end-to-end real-time their transportation systems in their city, and hopefully make small changes that eventually over time make traffic and public transit more pleasant. And then lastly, 5G has a lot to offer in infrastructure applications. So again, we've been talking about smart cities for years, but there's a lot of public safety benefits there. We're talking about, you know, smart ambulances that are connected with traffic lights and the hospital, smart parking, street lights, water, waste management. There's endless opportunities for smart cities. So these are just a couple of applications that 5G will enable that we've been working a lot on, and there's many, many more, and there's applications that we can't even conceive of today, but that's kind of where we're at so far.
So what about outside urban areas, Lauren? Are there benefits for 5G in rural? I mean, I've heard a lot about 5G in rural, but I'm not so convinced. Can you give us a sense for what the benefits are for 5G in rural areas and other underrepresented communities?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's totally fair. And I think a lot of folks share that sentiment where a lot of the hype around 5G has been applications in cities. And perhaps it's, you know, a little easier to envision 5G in dense areas, but we do want to make rural part of this conversation. And so a couple of use cases we think could be really meaningful in rural areas. 5G can provide a better solution for last mile connectivity, meaning connecting a rural residence to the closest wired broadband connection. And that already exists to a certain extent today. Some rural customers rely on WISPs or wireless ISPs who provide this service, but it does have limitations with 4G. And a lot of times we only see download speeds of maybe 10 megabits per second, which is obviously a lot slower than what those of us with a wired connection have. But with 5G, you could easily see speeds of 50 megabits per second. So it can really be a better solution for broadband in the home in rural areas. And even outside of wireless ISPs, Nokia actually produces a product called FastMile. And it's essentially a consumer device. It's about the size of a pizza box that you place on either the side of your home or on a tree near your home. And what it does is it receives signals that your phone or tablet can't receive. Today, 4G and eventually 5G, and it can act as a Wi-Fi router for your home. Other besides broadband to the home, other applications in rural areas are things like connected agriculture. So fitting a farm with thousands of sensors so that they can communicate with machinery, can communicate with the farmer, so that farmers have end-to-end real-time information about their crops all the time. And then, of course, telemedicine in remote areas, there's a huge opportunity there, whether it's remote monitoring or remote communication with your doctor, or if you do live in a remote area and, God forbid, you have to be transported by ambulance, you can imagine in some of these areas it could be 30 minutes, an hour or more ambulance ride to the nearest hospital. And so if an ambulance can be outfitted with 5G and can communicate in real time and send data real time to the nearest emergency department, that can definitely be a life-saving application. Outside of rural areas, in other underrepresented communities, in more urban settings, we talk about, we know that low-income communities don't often have access to a wired broadband connection. They're really reliant on their mobile phones. And so again, 5G can provide a better solution for that last mile connectivity and provide Wi-Fi to homes that don't have it today. And obviously that can open a lot of opportunities for educational access, applying for jobs, working from home. We're seeing schools today express a lot of interest in 5G technology, thinking about things like putting RFID chips in student ID cards so they can track tardiness and absenteeism, tracking buses in real time. And then there's also some unique cases for telemedicine in underrepresented communities in urban areas. We know that people of color are disproportionately affected by chronic diseases, especially heart disease and diabetes. And so again, having a 5G device for remote monitoring, you can diagnose remotely, you can track the progression of the disease in real time, you can aid in the administration of medicine. And also in some of these areas where you're talking about free or heavily subsidized clinics, a lot of these hospitals don't benefit from having a specialist on site like a lot of other hospitals would. And so if a hospital or a doctor's office is outfitted with 5G and they can communicate and send data real time to a specialist off site, that could be a game changer in some of these cities. And then lastly, on the smart cities front, underrepresented communities actually have a lot to gain from smart cities. We know that African Americans and Hispanics spend on average 7.2% of their household income on utility services, which is several times higher than other households. So what we're trying to do is enable the electric grid and electric meters with 5G to improve some of these efficiencies and lower costs. And then similarly, we know that water service shutoffs and the increasing price of water disproportionately affects people of color. And so we're talking about installing sensors in the water system and the water pipe so that we can detect leaks and contamination and vulnerable infrastructure. So those are just a couple of, again, use cases that we're thinking about for both rural and other underrepresented communities.
So what should regulators and legislators be thinking about as we transition to this technology, Lauren? Do we have the appropriate policies in place to ensure U.S. leadership here?
I think there's three things that regulators and legislators should really be thinking about. The first is spectrum. As I alluded to earlier, we need more spectrum to enable 5G. And the FCC has made some progress on certain bands of spectrum, but for example, mid-band spectrum, we're a little bit behind other countries, South Korea, Spain, Vietnam, they're ahead of us with respect to that. And so that's alarming to us to the extent that it's going to threaten U.S. leadership in 5G. The second thing regulators and legislators should focus on is siting policies for telecom equipment. And that's something we've talked about a lot here in D.C., but 5G requires hundreds of thousands of small cells. And so when our customers have to go through a quagmire of regulations and fees that take weeks just to install one small cell, it really inhibits the ability for them to build out quickly and effectively. And obviously it's a balance because localities have every right to decide what type of technology is coming into their community and being built out on their infrastructure. But it's a balance between that and making sure that residents do have access to 5G. And then lastly, something that we think is important for the government particularly to keep in mind is how we get 5G to everyone. So there's different definitions for U.S. leadership in 5G, but one of those should be how everyone can benefit from it. U.S. leadership shouldn't just be building out to affluent, heavily populated pockets in the country. And so we understand that in some of these underrepresented communities, rural communities, there's just not a business case there to deploy 4G and 5G, and we understand that. And so that's where government funding can come in and be helpful. And the ball's moving forward a little bit. There's programs at different agencies that provide grants. There's a couple of bills in the House and Senate that provide funding for this purpose. So the ball is slowly moving forward, but we do have a little bit of ways to go to make sure that everyone really benefits from this technology.
Well, Lauren, thanks so much for shedding light for us here. Obviously, we hear so much about 5G in China and other countries. We better get our act together here. Do you think the FCC has currently has the right apparatus, or do they need something more from Congress?
You know, I don't think they need a lot of help from Congress, quite honestly. And I say that as a recent former congressional staffer, but they have a lot of authority, and spectrum auctions are squarely within their authority, and they have the ability to do it. So it's just a matter of getting all the details right, which spectrum auctions are very complicated, and I certainly understand it takes time, and there's a lot of stakeholder interest there, but they absolutely have the tools that they need today to be able to move the ball forward.
Got it. So let's turn to your icebreaker, your career hack, and your pick for our book this week. Okay, so it's time for this week's icebreaker question. Okay, what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
I think I've been given this piece of advice several times throughout my career, but it's best summed up in a phrase that a lot of us have heard, which is, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice.
True.
And I say that as my most important piece of advice that I've ever been given because it's so easy to forget, especially in places like D.C., but you just never know. You have to be nice to everyone. You just never know where people will end up. You know, I've seen what I thought were unprofessional interns become chiefs of staff. I've seen law firm partners out of a job, you know, unexpectedly. So it's just so important to be nice to everyone because you never know where people will end up. And I just think that you will gain more respect by being nice than being someone who's not nice but really smart. So that's something that's always stuck with me.
You know, I've asked this question before, and I don't think my answer has changed that much. It's similar to yours, and that's, you know, not to judge my insides by other people's outsides, because everyone's going through something difficult that you have no idea about, and we often lose sight of that in competitive environments, like you said, in D.C., but you don't have any control over how they behave. So who knows why someone's behaving the way they're behaving? They, for example, they may have just gotten laid off. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have a responsibility to yourself, you know, not to internalize other people's rudeness. And you can get a lot of that in stressful environments like DC and New York. I've worked in both. And let me tell you, you better have those skills. So Lauren, when we reach a certain point in our careers, many of us are called on for advice. What do you tell that person who comes to your office looking for their first job or even their next job about Washington and what they need to be prepared for if they're going to build a career here?
Sure. So I actually give the same piece of advice to a lot of young attorneys and interns that I talk to, and I often get a laugh, but give it a chance and I'll explain why. So my advice to them is always to be cool. You have to be cool. And I will explain that. And what I mean by that is, when you are interviewing, for example, that's often the biggest thing I get asked about, is how to be successful in interviews. And I've talked to enough people and interviewed enough to know that the number one question that an interviewer is looking to answer when they walk into the room is this person cool? Meaning, are they confident? Can they carry on a conversation? If we hire them, can they represent our boss well or the company well? And so in a lot of these contexts, you can be the smartest person in the room, but if you don't have those attributes of being personable, confident, being able to carry on, it's going to be a lot more difficult for you. So it's kind of a hard skill to practice, but to the extent that you can be aware of that when you walk into an interview, I think that will take you far. And some of the people that I've worked with that have been the most effective have not been the smartest people in the room, but they know how to conduct themselves in a way that moves them forward more quickly than simply being smart. So that's my piece of advice.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. And you can see, again, you practice going to networking events, but the other thing about going to networking events is you can see how badly social skills are needed.
Yes.
At a lot of these things. So I'll just leave that there. Tell us about a book you're reading and what you're watching these days.
Sure. So lately I've been into books that are either true stories or just about things that impact my life. And what I'm reading right now is a book called 90% of Everything. And it's a book about the commercial shipping industry, which sounds kind of random, but it really does impact all of our lives. So it's about the author, Rose George. She travels for months inside the network of commercial shipping on freight liners at ports with a piracy task force, and just really documents the commercial shipping industry. And it's fascinating listening to how post-industrial economies are really so reliant on shipping, but it is such an invisible industry, and in certain cases, very lightly regulated, which is shocking considering the environmental impacts that it has. So I'm not through with the book yet, but I'm reading that today and I find it fascinating. And again, it impacts all of our lives.
Sounds fascinating. And not something that I would necessarily think to purchase, but if I saw it on the bookshelf, I'd from what you described, I think I'd find that interesting. Well, thanks again, Lauren, for joining me. Do you have any final ideas you'd like to leave with the audience before we close? And where can we find you online?
Sure. I would encourage everyone to follow Nokia and Nokia Networks on Twitter. They do an excellent job with content and providing layman's terms, explanations, and white papers about 5G, where we are, what we're working on. So the extent that any listener wants to keep up and understand from a networking perspective or consumer side or anything, I encourage you to follow those two accounts on Twitter.
You've been listening to Lauren McCarty, Senior Director of Policy and Government Relations at Nokia. Lauren, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
That concludes episode 194 of the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. There's so much to unpack with 5G, so I hope this sheds some light. If you like what we do, we'd love to hear from you. Please take a moment to head over to Apple Podcasts, give it a review. It helps others know what they can expect from the show and really helps us out. Thanks again to all of you for listening, and I'll see you back here next week. Take care.
Washing Tech.